Welcome to the DMSG Healthcare Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Hadley, founder and CEO of the Denver Medical Study Group. It's my pleasure today to visit with Garrett Chisholm, Director of the Master of Healthcare Administration Program at Metro State University. Garrett is also one of our Denver Medical Study Group Advisory Board members, and we're glad to have him as a part of that. Garrett, thank you for joining me here today. Would you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and your background?
Well, good afternoon, and thanks for having me. Sure, I'd be happy to. So my name is Garrett Chisholm, and I have been in healthcare for about 30 years. I have done it my entire life. I started with the fire department as a volunteer, an explorer at 16 years old, and became fascinated with the emergency medical services area. And so I went to paramedic school, trained in Los Angeles, and worked as a paramedic in a town called Glendale, California, and did that for 4 years before moving out to Denver. And the reason I moved is I had a great opportunity to work with the kind of infamous Denver Health Paramedic Division. So in the EMS world, Denver Health is one of the premier agencies in the world. And I was very fortunate to be able to spend my paramedic career there during my formal years. And at the same time, I studied healthcare administration. I was originally a biology student and had an interest in business. My father-in-law, Michael Anderson, was a healthcare management consultant for many years, most of his career. And he was quite the mentor to me. And I became more and more interested in healthcare administration. And so I switched my degree and went to MSU Denver in the healthcare administration program. And after finishing, I then went on and did my master's in business. And at that point, I had made a transition into hospital administration. In 2006, Sky Ridge Medical Center in Lone Tree, Colorado had just been built a few years earlier than that. And I had an opportunity to be their EMS coordinator. And so my responsibility was interacting with all the EMS folks in the region and being the liaison to the hospital. And that position grew. I ended up taking over disaster preparedness as well, and also trauma administration. And this was in the days of post 9/11. And I was very fortunate to work with a few physicians at Denver Health that did research in disaster medicine. And I had an interest, especially after 9/11, in disaster preparedness. And so I spent a lot of my time working in that area. And I ended up at Sky Ridge for 8 years and helped build that EMS program and the trauma and disaster preparedness program. And then had a calling back home to Denver Health and spent the last almost five years back at Denver Health working as a paramedic again. And then during that time, I was affiliate faculty at MSU Denver. I was teaching in strategy and quality and, you know, kind of a generalist. I could teach most of the undergrad courses and have been doing that for the last decade or so. And right 2019, kind of late 2019, MSU Denver had started reaching out, asking if I would be interested in a program director for the MHA program. And started thinking about that fairly seriously and ended up joining MSU Denver full-time January 2020, so right before the pandemic. And that's how I ended up here.
Wow. Well, I feel a lot safer on the roads knowing that you've got that EMS background. That's wonderful. And yes. Also, we're going to be doing a podcast interview with the new CEO of Denver Health, Donna Lynn. We're excited about that. When the pandemic hit in 2020, as you said, you had just transitioned to academia full time as director of MSU's program. And what challenges did you have to face during that 2 year period?
Well, I think, you know, as I reflect back now, you know, the first was obviously safety. You know, it's easy to forget that in those early days, we didn't really know what was going on. We knew that we had a highly infectious virus. We knew that it had a high mortality, morbidity rate, and that was about it. And so safety was really kind of, I think, on the forefront of all of our minds, including myself, not just for us, the faculty, the staff, the students, you know, our own families. It was quite stressful. And so that was probably the largest kind of early challenge is how do we make everyone safe, as safe as possible for the moment? You know, the second part of that was, you know, the big challenge for me, at least initially, was I was having quite a bit of kind of internal struggle because folks that are in the field want to be with their teams and using their skills. And so this is an area I'd studied my whole life. And it was very difficult for me to be away from it. In fact, I made a few phone calls to EMS agencies that I work for and said, I want to volunteer. I'll do whatever I can to get back. And it was a complete lockdown. I was not able to do that. And in hindsight, I think that was probably smart. I needed to focus on the things that I needed to focus on for the program, but it was quite difficult. You know, the next one was really the program. You know, how do you keep a program going during an incredibly difficult time and really not knowing what's going to happen? I think that was the most challenging is, you know, what does this mean from a student's perspective? What does this mean from our program? But the other piece too is that especially in a health administration program, many of our faculty are in the field still. And so, you know, can they really commit the hours to the students and can they do it successfully? And that was I have to give a lot of credit to our faculty because it was an incredibly difficult time for all of us. And I'm reminded on that much of our affiliate faculty that are still in the field, you know, they're working during the day to deal with this crisis and then coming in the evening to teach our students. It's an incredible testament to their ability. And it wasn't easy. It wasn't easy at all.
I'm sure that's right. So were most of your students on campus at the time, or were some of them already doing virtual learning?
So actually, that was maybe one of the easiest transitions for us because we're a hybrid program. So all of our curriculum, our department was an early adopter to online learning and had really started, you know, close to 20 years ago with some of the first systems out there. So for us, all the curriculum was already online. We use a learning management platform called Canvas. It's very impressive. And so for that, the curriculum's online, the interactions were already online. We had been using Zoom for the last several years prior to the pandemic. So that piece was a fairly easy transition. In fact, I'd say that from a technology standpoint, the classroom was easier than the actual department, the office. Our office still met Monday through Friday, 8 to 5. And so that was really the larger challenge of moving all of our equipment offsite, you know, setting up a virtual office, getting our teams together, making sure everyone's safe. You know, and I'm sure like most people, we spend an inordinate amount of time really thinking and talking about our staff and our faculty's well-being during this time. So, you know, agendas that had been fairly traditionally locked to certain content, we ended up becoming a lot more flexible to kind of talk through all the things that we needed to deal with, and including helping each other.
You had mentioned when we talked before that your graduate student enrollment had actually grown quite a bit over the past 2 years. What do you attribute that growth to?
You know, that's a great question, Chris, and I wish I could give you one specific answer. I think a couple things. One is there is a pattern in higher ed that when the economy is struggling, that more people go back to the university. So I think that's part of it. I think the second part is that it was our kind of format already. You know, we were hybrid and now completely online, in that since people were home, they were able to maybe participate in a program that they had not previously had the opportunity to do. And then the third one that the faculty we discuss is the Fauci effect. You know, there's this enormous interest in health and public health, the healthcare field. And I think that for some, probably a similar reaction to both of us, that there's this attraction to be in the industry. And it called on folks that may have been looking at a different opportunity.
You know, with such a diverse background in healthcare that you have, what impact has that had on your leadership philosophy in the MSU's master program?
Well, I think especially with my background as a paramedic, one of the things that you're taught and you have to practice quite a bit is your ability to stay calm. Especially in very chaotic and stressful environments, we talk to paramedics and we teach them about, you know, you setting the tone for the environment. And so one of the things that I wanted to focus on early on is to make sure that I was calm under pressure. It's for me, following a leader like that, it creates an environment where you can think more clearly. We know from a physiologic background that when you stress, you don't make as clear decisions. And so, you know, that was a big part of my focus with my background. You know, the second part of it is that I wanted to make sure that, you know, I came across in my leadership as being very strategic and problem solving, but also really bringing in empathy. I think that, you know, from a leader standpoint, especially in the last couple of years, having empathy for others is such a powerful tool with your team. All of us can have countless stories on how stressful that time was. And especially for students and faculty, but, you know, for students, this was, you know, of course, a major disruption into their world and trying to figure out how they're going to navigate through this all. It requires, you know, steady leadership and guidance and lots of mentoring.
Yeah, I'm sure that's right. You know, as director of the MHA program there, do you teach any of the classes?
I do. So not as much as I did during the pandemic. You know, one of the things we had to do was be flexible with some of our faculty choices, just because of the sheer amount of faculty that were involved in kind of day-to-day healthcare operations. I ended up teaching the capstone course, which I enjoy. And, you know, at MSU Denver, we have two capstones. We have a residency and a thesis. And I ended up teaching the capstone during the pandemic. But most of my additional teaching was behind the scenes. When I do teach, I usually teach at the undergrad level, specifically strategic planning and quality. And then, you know, I occasionally still lecture for EMS agencies. And so I enjoy, that's my favorite. I love doing case reviews with EMTs and paramedics and firefighters and talking about some real cases and giving them the behind the scenes view of what happens with those patients and how they kind of navigate through the healthcare system. So I don't teach as often anymore. We've been very fortunate to hire on some amazingly talented faculty, and I get out of their way and let them do what they do best. And I just try to run the behind the scenes and keep it smooth for them.
You stay out of trouble that way, don't you?
I do.
You know, you have shared that your passion is to prepare students for their future upon graduation. Anything that you do specifically in that regard?
Yeah, you know, it's a great question. I wish I had come up with this quote, but I did not, but I use it often. When my wife and I were looking at schools for our children, I spoke to one schoolmaster who said it perfectly. Our job is to prepare students for the jobs that don't even exist yet. And that is a powerful responsibility. And so, to add to that, I think the challenge for faculty is to prepare students to have to prepare them for the jobs that are currently needed and the skills that are needed, but with this thought of what's coming down the future that we just don't know yet. And so when we get to the how to do that part, you know, we really think carefully about the science of teaching, pedagogy, the larger concepts like systems thinking and connecting the dots of these complex things. We spend a lot of time talking about soft skills and how to kind of mentor behavior. We spend a lot of time on communication, how to become active listeners, how to communicate written and verbal communication at a high level. And then in addition is how to do all this in a very ethical way. As we all know, some of these challenges that these leaders are facing are both very complicated, they're complex, and they also require a high level of ethical behavior. And so when we're looking at curriculum and we're trying to figure out, you know, how do we do this, we do it in a way that we look at national models for competencies, what healthcare leaders need to know, how well do they need to know it. But also we want to convey, you know, really highly ethical decision-making and communication and professional behavior that is required by all these folks.
Do you know what happens to your students when they graduate? Where do they go? Do they go into health systems? Do they go into medical practices? What do they do?
Yeah, it's a great question. We actually survey our students after every graduating class. And so one of the things that we're working on is we have a primary accreditation through the Higher Learning Commission, but we are going through a secondary accreditation through CAMI. And this is the large accrediting body for health administration programs. It's really the gold standard. And one of the requirements of CAMI is really to have a very good understanding of your students. And that is formed in a survey to students. And so we ask every student after they graduate, within 3 months of graduating, where do they end up? What type of program? We actually go into detail about salary, interest in education, like postgraduate work. And so we have all that information. You know, not to any surprise, it follows kind of the normal line of health administration programs around the country, but the number one program or the number one employer is hospitals and healthcare systems. The next is kind of divided between medical practice groups, clinics, and then we also, and our students in particular, have an interest in public health. And so we're seeing more students working in various forms of public health. They have an interest in healthcare policy. And so many of the folks are heading to CDPHE or county health departments. And then closely followed by aging services. We've had a fairly substantial aging services program with many connections in the community. And so many of our folks are doing that as well.
That's great to hear. We recently did a focus group with some of the MBA programs and where did their students go? And it was consistent with what you've shared. One last question for you, Garrett. Is there anything else that you might like to add to today's discussion?
Well, my initial reaction when I saw this was that as an educator, I should tell everyone to read their syllabus. That was my gut instinct. That's more like to the students. But the one thing I would say is we are celebrating our 50th anniversary. And it's this year in our undergraduate healthcare management program, which was really the foundation of our MHA. And we're just so proud to be serving the community and the state and all these students for this many years. And so we're planning lots of celebratory events, but I would be in trouble if I didn't mention that during this time.
Well, that's wonderful. Congratulations on the 50 years. And we look forward to hearing more about that as you go forward. And thank you so much for your time today, Garrett. It was very informative to hear about your program. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure.